So I think Wayne has made me feel really guilty that I didn't actually write down the piece of paper that I celebrated my 15th wedding anniversary this year as well. So, gee, thanks, Wayne. But what did I achieve? Well, I don't want to boast about anything too great, but I did change a light bulb this year. Hey, no, it might not seem like a great thing, but it was a car headlamp, and it was kind of fiddly getting in there, and I'm not that good at cars and stuff, so that was quite an achievement for me. What else did I do? I changed my job, so I moved, same company, different department, downstairs into the coldest, dampest corner in the building. So maybe that wasn't such a good idea. What else did I do? Oh, I know, I read some books this year. That counts as an achievement. How many people here managed to do the reading the New Testament in a year? Yeah, okay, so quite a few people. I had to read 3 chapters this morning to make up, so it wasn't too bad to finish off the year with. Didn't get too far behind. But I've got one more book to read, but I think I'm going to leave that onto the new year. And that was this one here. Some of you might have seen it. It's quite a short one, actually. It's only 50 pages. That's probably about something I could manage, even. It's got 16 chapters, so about 3 pages in a chapter. If I read, one chapter a day, does that add up? 16, 3, 40? Yeah, that's about right. So I might be able to finish this by the middle of January. So hopefully most of you who are on the church mailing list will have received one of these with your Christmas card this year. And this is a book about a spiritual health check, about seeing how spiritually healthy that you are. Now, I did actually have a medical health check this year, and they told me from that I wasn't likely to die in the immediate future, which was kind of encouraging. But I think sometimes those things are meant to help you with some New Year's resolutions about how you're going to be a bit more healthy, how you're going to do a bit of running or health or join the gym or eat more healthily. Eat more chocolate or something like that, isn't it? But how do we stay spiritually healthy? Well, I don't want to spoil it because it's there in the book, 16 chapters, 16 days. You can read it before your New Year's resolve wears off. How long does a New Year's resolution usually last for? Any guesses? A couple of hours there from Simon, a couple of days there. Couple of hours, that's before you've even finished your New Year's party, isn't it? A week over there, anyone longer than a week they manage their New Year's resolutions for? I looked on the internet, and according to The Independent, the average was 24 days that people keep things up for. I think it was mostly talking about the health and fitness stuff. And then the cold kind of kicks in, and you don't manage to achieve. Actually, about a third of people manage to keep their New Year's resolutions for the whole year. That's pretty good. A third, yeah, that high. So, the question is, though, maybe we looked at what we achieved this year, but maybe what's more important is, what does God think is your most important achievement of this year? So just think about that for a second. What does God think is your most important achievement of this year? Now, let's just take a little sidestep over here. Does anyone know what a catechism is? Catechism? Anyone with a good Anglican or something background will should know this sort of one. But Joan, what is it?
It's doctrine. Church doctrine.
Church doctrine. It's a series of questions and answers about the church doctrine, about the things which we believe. So there's some questions about, what's this about? And there's an answer. It's a way to help people memorize what it is that we believe. And if you've ever heard of the Westminster Catechism, which is one of the most famous ones, you might have tried to read it, but it takes quite a while. I'd be impressed if anyone's tried to memorize it. I managed the first point in the shorter version, because it's really easy, which is, what is the chief end of man? And it's man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. You can remember that? Man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Now, that one question about what is the chief end of man, it's like, what's the purpose? What's our reason? It sums up a whole bunch of Bible verses from the beginning of Scripture right through to the end. And possibly one of the best known ones is where in Philippians, where Paul says, Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again. Rejoice. There's a theme in that verse. Can you get what it is? Rejoice. And that's a great word for Christmas, isn't it? Does anyone here object to rejoicing and enjoying themselves? No, can't see anyone objecting to that. I think joy is great. And it's something that goes all the way through the Christmas story, right from the start to the end. Now, who does the rejoicing? Angels. Yeah, my daughter was up there, Gabriel, during the nativity. They're rejoicing in Jesus' birth. And they also talk about joy to the world. That's one of those great songs which we sing at Christmas, isn't it? Joy to the world, because Christmas is all about joy. So what's that got to do with a book? Because sort of these health check things, there seems like a bunch of chores and stuff. I've got to do this, got to do that. Well, what if one of the chores, what if some of the things you had to do was to enjoy God? Does that seem like a strange thing? To enjoy God. But that's what Paul was saying in that verse. Rejoice, enjoy God, rejoice in the Lord. When? Always rejoice. Sometimes it takes a bit of hard work to enjoy ourselves. You know, it's easier to just sit on the couch and watch TV rather than to get up and do something. But when we get up and do things, that's the things which we tend to enjoy more. The more effort we put into things, the more we enjoy them. I know I've certainly enjoyed the things this Christmas that I've put the more work into doing. And so this book helps us to look at those things which will help us to enjoy God. And remember, joy isn't something that's dependent on our outward circumstances, but it's something that comes from within, something that we can rejoice in, the things which we know about who God is. So back to the question I asked before, what does God think is your most important achievement of 2017? Maybe it was the times in which you've glorified and enjoyed him the most. And especially if it was during hard times. So let's continue to worship God now as we sing a nice traditional Christmas carol, We Three Kings. We're going to have a reading now, and Tony's going to put the words of the reading up on the screen for us so we can all read through together. Now, one of the troubles with getting a bit old is that your eyesight tends to be a bit rough, and for me to be able to see that on the screen can be a bit difficult. So I'm going to actually need your help, because there's occasions when I make mistakes in what I'm saying. Now, I know at school you're meant to put your hand up and say, "Sir, you made a mistake." I don't need to do that. Just shout it out this time, okay? If I get anything wrong in any of the words from what's on the screen, then please just shout out the mistake I've made so that we can make sure we really understand and get all the details of the story correct. Is that okay? Yeah, that wasn't very convincing. Did they have too much Christmas pudding, do you reckon? I don't. Is that okay?
Yes.
Right, excellent. So, after Jesus was born in Burnham... Excellent, good one. Magi from Maidenhead came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been elected king of the Jews? We saw his car when it rose, and we've come to worship him." When Queen Elizabeth heard this, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the telegraph has written." Then Herod called the Magi screamingly, and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Google a search carefully. Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and capture him." capture him was what he was thinking, really, wasn't it? After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went under them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were relieved. And on coming to the stable, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they sat down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of a golf club, Frankenstein, and fur. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another airline. Well, thanks for all your help with that. I made a couple of mistakes, didn't I? Sorry. And some of them were actually kind of important details. I mean, imagine if the Magi really had come from Maidenhead. And, well, yeah, going to Burnham rather than Bethlehem. That would be a little bit different. And some of the details we imagined about the Christmas story are a little bit different from what's written in the Bible. Some of them matter quite a lot, and some of them aren't quite so important. Now, we just sang a great Christmas carol, We Three Kings, but it's got a few questionable words right there in the first line. Tony, can you put the first verse up for that? A few questionable words there in the first line. Anything anyone would like to question there? Shout it out.
Three.
How many kings were there?
At least three.
At least three? Oh, that's another problem, because there weren't any kings, were there? Tricked you on that one. Firstly, we don't know how many people there were that went in this entourage. Secondly, kings, well, we don't really know what they are. It just says magi. That's kind of like a wise man, we say also sometimes. And the other word is orient, but that depends on your definition of the word orient. So let's think. First of all, three. Now, I was thinking about this. Now, can you imagine if, let's say, we took three of the elders of the church here. So we'll have John and me and Andy, because they're the ones I can see, first of all. And we went up to Windsor Castle and saying, we're three wise men from Slough. And it doesn't sound right, does it? Three wise men of Slough. And we would like to see Queen Elizabeth, because we've heard there's a baby king just been born somewhere. What do you think the response would be? Helen thinks we'd be shot. I think the response would be just that, laughter. I think the guards at Windsor Castle would just laugh at us and say, don't be so ridiculous. But then in this story, we've got these wise men, these magi, who've turned up to King Herod, and they've got to go and see him to tell about this baby being born. Now, that kind of makes me think that they must have looked pretty important, and it probably wasn't just three. There's probably a huge entourage of people that actually came, because, you know, there'd been the wise men, their servants, their security guards, a whole bunch of people, and they would have been dressed incredibly beautifully as well. So then when Herod saw them coming and thinking, this is someone important, the guards would have let them through, ushered them into Herod's presence so they can have an audience with the king. Now, saying about magi, there's different people who have got different ideas about what they are, but I kind of think that they were like somewhere between government ministers and research scientists and philosophers, scientists all sort of thrown into one sort of thing, if you can imagine that. And the Orient, that was the other word in there, Orient. Well, it depends on how you define it, but some people think of Orient nowadays as meaning China. I don't think they probably came from China, because the word magi is a Persian word, which in the Bible is used to refer to the prophet Daniel. So they probably came from somewhere more like around Iran, Iraq, or Turkey. But before we criticise anything more about the song, I think it's great. And it wasn't actually written to be a hymn. You remember a couple of weeks ago, we did our nativity play in church, and we sang a song then about wise men. And possibly some of the details in that song were a little bit questionable as well. Well, this song was written to be part of a musical nativity play as well, just like that, except for that was about 150 years ago. And the guy who wrote it didn't actually think it was going to become a carol that was going to be sung all the way around the English-speaking world. But Tony, if you can look at the second verse. It tells in the second verse, that's the chorus. Thank you. As we go through the verses, it tells about the gifts which the wise men brought. So in this one, second verse, it talks about gold. And what was gold a symbol of here? On the third line?
Kingship.
Gold, a gift fit for a king. If we go to the third verse, we have, hopefully, frankincense. And frankincense, what does that symbolize? Worship. So recognizing Jesus as God and someone who's worthy of worship. And the fourth verse? Myrrh. And what does that look towards? Jesus' death, Jesus being a sacrifice. And the fifth verse puts the three all together. King and God and sacrifice. And that's who the wise men came to worship. So even if the first line's a little bit questionable, we still sing it because there's some great truths there in the song. Now, we looked before about what's your most important achievement of this year. But what do you think the wise men would have said in answer to that question? Do you think they'd have talked about this epic journey of hundreds, maybe even thousands of miles? Or maybe the fact that they got to meet two kings in the space of a couple of days? Do you think they'd have published a blog online about their trip, telling everyone what they've been up to? What do you think their most important achievement might be? Now, at this point, I need to apologize because I said about my job, well, I am an accountant, and people in my office sometimes travel. And one of the things we have to do when people travel is work out beforehand what it's going to cost. So when I think about these wise men making this long journey, it set me thinking about how much did it cost? Now, for the purposes of this, we'll just assume there were three wise men because we need to make some kind of assumptions. How long did it take for the journey? And we don't really know, but we'll kind of guess 3 months, okay? 3 months, so they have to go there and back, so it's 3 months, and 3 months is 6 months. Now, they'd have needed some camels. How much did it cost to rent a camel? Does anyone know how much it cost to rent a camel? Has anyone ever rented a camel? Yeah, they're not the most comfortable things to ride on. But the best price I could find on the internet was about £100 a day. Now, if you think of £100 a day for 6 months for three wise men, that you end up with about £50,000 just on your camel rental. Now, 6 months, oh, they'd also need some food, wouldn't they? And a place to stay every single night for 6 months. And they couldn't have worked, so they'd have needed to take 6 months unpaid leave from work. That's going to cost a lot of money. And then, oh yeah, we just had that gold, frankincense and myrrh. My word, this trip must have cost them an absolute fortune. In fact, I saw one person estimating on the internet that the whole thing would have cost around £1 million. But you know what? We have no idea how much the trip would have cost. We know it would have been very expensive, but the Bible doesn't tell us. But they went all that way just to see a baby? But the reason the Bible tells us is because it doesn't want us to get distracted about those little details. Because the main point was why they came. In the reading, we said they bowed down and they worshipped Jesus. Jesus was just a baby at this point, a small child, and they bowed down and worshipped a small child. But you know what? I don't think that these wise men would have considered that the cost of their trip or meeting Herod or anything about it would be the most important thing of that year. See, what they'd have been talking about when they came home would have been about Jesus, about meeting him, about worshipping him, about bowing down before him. You see, their trip, meeting Jesus, it was worth all the money in the world. But what was their reaction? You know, they'd gone to Jerusalem, seen Herod and stuff, and they kind of realized they weren't exactly in the right place. What was their reaction when they saw the star again as they were coming out of Jerusalem? It says they rejoiced. Actually, it doesn't say that. In our version, it says they rejoiced exceedingly. And in fact, if you go back to the original Greek stuff, it says they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Now, how much sort of joy is that? Is that just an insy-wincy bit? No, that's a huge amount of joy. They rejoiced exceedingly about just seeing the star, which led them to what they were really looking for, which was Jesus, the baby. They were ecstatic and delirious. Now, their adventure may have been great, and they may have had a lot of stories to tell, but what mattered most is what was written in the Bible, that end point. They bowed down and they worshipped. Following the star, that was just the journey, but they completed their journey and they worshipped Jesus. So what you've achieved this year may be really important. I don't want to diminish that at all. It's something that means something to you. But what matters most of all to God is how we have glorified and enjoyed Jesus. And we can worship him, we can glorify him in our day-to-day life. We can worship him at church, we can worship him at home. You can worship Jesus at school or at work. You can even worship him in the car. But it shouldn't be a chore. It should be something we enjoy. If you remember King David in the Old Testament, you know, how did he worship Jesus? He just got out on the street and was dancing wildly around. He wasn't caring about who was looking at him or how embarrassed he might be about what's going on. You see, we just need to become more like children and express that worship to Jesus and to enjoy him. And so, like the wise men, let us rejoice exceedingly with great joy as we enjoy Jesus and worship him together this year and now.